All right, everyone, welcome to The Drew Han Show. I'm your host, Drew. Coming up shortly, I'll be featuring an interview with Luke Schaefer of Me Like Bees. They were recently here in Appleton for an album release show. Luke sat down with me to discuss their music and how the Bees came to be. I sat down to interview Luke at Todd Van Hammond's house, man of the music here in the Valley. I'd like to welcome Todd to the show and help me tee up Luke's interview. Welcome, Todd.
Thanks, Drew.
All right, cool. I guess, you know, you have a long history with the Bees. How did you discover them?
Long history at this point. So back when Mila Music started, I was actually on the music team for picking bands and so forth. So we'd take the submissions and we had to listen to them all to give them all a fair shake. And some years that was 400 or 500 bands. And in mile three, I believe it was, we had a session. We were meeting at Basil's there one night with a group of us, and Corey Chisel was there, and you know, we had all the different people and listening to a lot of the submissions, and Me Like Bees was a name that came up, and we went around the circle, and what'd you guys think? You know, oh yeah, definitely. You know, they were like a shoe-in. Corey Chisel made a joke about, with a name like that, they gotta be in, you know. So it was like the name stood out and everyone really enjoyed them. So when the weekend came and we're chasing around seeing bands, you know, I had them circle that, okay, I got to make at least one. So I remember the first night I was at a different show and it got done and they were playing, Bees were at Mill Creek. And I'm like, I'm going to race over there and see if I can just at least catch a little bit. Hopefully they're running late, whatever. Ran in, got right up by the stage. I think maybe a song and a half and their set was done, but because it was the last show of the night, they actually came back out and did an encore, and Mill Creek was going crazy. And it's like, oh wow, this is so awesome. And I mean, I didn't get to catch a lot, but I'm like, I can't wait for the show I've got tomorrow at Fox River House.
Right.
So that was the first true full show then the next day at Fox River House that I got to see them. And you know, the guys being how they are, they're hanging out afterwards, chatting with everyone, you know, pick up their CD, and I picked up the Ides, their first CD they didn't have, they had sold out the last few they had, and or the EP, I guess it was. But yeah, so he got to, you know, got to do it, like, I audio recorded, you know, the live show at that one, and so forth, so it all kind of started from there, you know, and I reached out, you know, I talked with Tim a lot, the drummer at the time, because, you know, Luke was pretty busy talking to everyone else and stuff. But I talked to Tim and to Nick. And, you know, Pete was pretty quiet. So yeah. I didn't talk to him a whole lot. But I talked to those guys and ran into him, you know, on the street like you always do at Mile, right? So chatted with him here a little bit. And then, you know, reached out and asked him, like, about particular songs. Like, song titles in it that maybe weren't on the CD and stuff like that. Just so I had for my live recording, I knew what the set list was for my tracks. So it all kind of started from there. And, you know, then, you know, they'd reach out here and there, or I'd send them something. And then that's August, right? So Mile, they played in Madison in December. And I don't recall, probably Joe Arena and I drove down, maybe a couple other folks, but we drove down to High Noon Saloon to see him play.
Okay.
You know, once you're willing to travel and see a band, they tend to remember you.
Sure, yeah.
And yep. Know that you're probably one of their bigger fans and stuff. So, you know, when I had reached out and, you know, said, hey guys, you know, we have a carload of people coming down to see you, whatever. And it was like, oh yeah, great. And Luke's like, well, make sure you come early so we can go catch a bite to eat and stuff like that. So, you know, a kind of friendship build outside of, man, they started coming and playing Mill Creek a lot. And, you know, it just kind of started building and building from there, and they'd reach out. And so then the following summer, they were coming for Mile again, and Luke had reached out to me. I believe he sent me a message on Facebook, asked for my cell number, and he reached out and called because he was saying, hey, you know, I know you're kind of on the Mile team or whatever. How do you think this will work? We're bringing a friend along from Joplin that's playing. And this was Carter.
Oh, all right.
And he's riding along in the van with us, but we've got like 4 or 5 gigs, and he's got like 4 or 5 gigs.
Okay.
But we have one vehicle. Like, how is this going to work? And I'm just thinking, like, it's not going to work great. Like, I don't know where your set times are going to be, but chances are you're going to have to be in two different places at the same time. And Carter's playing solo. He's probably not going to have a ton of gear, but, you know, there was certainly a concern there. So I said, well, we have an extra car. Just have Carter take our extra Jeep and he can use that around town or whatever. So I'd never met Carter before. So the day before Mile started that year, I drove to Horicon to see him.
Okay.
Horicon had like a Wednesday night music series or something, and they were playing there on their way up to Appleton. So I went down. That's where I met Carter the first time. And just hung out with the Bees, you know, after their gigs. We were out late. You know, Luke and I like to go out and have a little fun after the shows and stuff. And just a great weekend. But then, many, many Mill Creek shows and stuff. And then I think kind of the funny thing what happened after that, the funny story I always remember is were you at the winter warm-up, the Mile of Music show at Tanner's?
Nah, yes.
There was like the Bees, maybe Suitcase Junket, and maybe Blackfoot Gypsies, something. Okay. It was a big show, packed. I think it was sold out, you know, close to 1,000 people. The funny thing that happened was, you know, my brother was there, and he was in the bathroom, and Luke comes in the bathroom, and they're standing there side by side. You know, they're doing their thing.
Right.
And Tim's like, my brother Tim, he's like, it's kind of awkward to strike up a conversation when you're kind of busy doing your job. Yeah. But he says something to Luke, and Luke being, you know, he just starts chatting with him or whatever. And then however it got said or whatever, and my brother said, well, you know my brother Todd or whatever. And Luke's comment back to Tim was, son of a gun, someday I'm going to play a concert at Todd's house.
Oh.
So he had said that, which was kind of funny. And I had never talked to Luke about it. But, yeah, he was like, you know, he'd seen stuff online that we did house shows and stuff like that. So, yeah, we went from that. And then, you know, it was probably the very next summer when Carter and Luke played here for the first time.
Okay.
And did their kind of duo show that they do.
Okay.
And so then they did two of them here that year, one in the living room and then one outside in the driveway. And, we just got to be better and better friends as, you know, they're coming and they're staying at our house for the weekend and stuff like that. So really built up a great friendship with all the guys, you know.
Yeah.
You know, including like, you know, Tim leaves as drummer, Lewis comes in, and, you know, Lewis was just an amazing guy. So, you know, it didn't really matter who was in the band, you know, everyone, you know, got along with everyone so great. They're just all a great bunch of guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nick, you know, Nick left playing bass and Jake took over. Jake was the merch guy. Yeah, crazy, you know, how that all worked. And Nick came back recently with Tim. So Tim's band was playing, not this past summer before.
Yeah. I do recall that you came with which band? The Travel Guide?
The Travel Guide. Yeah. So he flew in just to sell merch.
Yeah, actually, that weekend, Tim and the band and Nick all stayed by me.
Oh, there you go. Yep. So because Nick was coming in, Tim had called me and he's like, hey, Nick's flying in, but he's getting to Appleton before we'll even be here because they're driving with all their gear and whatnot. And he's like, is there any way, you know, you could pick him up at the airport? And oh, heck yeah. So I ran out there and picked him up. And Nick's like, can I just tag along with you? And he just went to a bunch of shows and we went and saw Fox Royale. You know, and he knew those guys.
Oh, okay.
Because Bees had played shows with them before, at least one. I think when they were called Guys on a Bus.
Or yes, whatever. That's correct. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and it got to the point. So now the really cool thing also to kind of layer this with is my youngest daughter, her favorite band is Me Like Bees.
Oh, okay.
So that's a really cool, really special thing for a parent and a, you know, a child to kind of share a band that they really love. And, you know, we listen to them like crazy, road trips, you know, and all the sort of stuff. So we took our daughter to go see the Bees in Joplin.
You did go to Joplin, huh?
Yeah, so it was an outdoor show in a park. It was free. So 10-hour drive. Fox Royale was the opener. Opening for the Bees. So we go all the way down there and it got rained out. Well, actually, Fox Royale opened the show and right as they finished, the clouds opened up.
So we
saw Fox Royale play and the Bees got canceled and they pushed it back and, you know, we couldn't drive back another time. We did that. But the great thing was, having the relationship with the Bees like we did, they thought it was so awesome. We were driving 10 hours that when we got to town, they invited us over to Jake's house, And we sat through the whole set. They kind of did a run through rehearsal. Oh, okay. So we did see them play the whole set that they were going to play that night in the, you know, in the garage and kind of rehearsal. So.
Okay. Good deal, Todd. All right. I got to circle back when you said you first kind of met the Bees or like introduced yourself. That was at Fox River House, correct?
Correct.
That was the very first show that I had ever seen from them, actually.
Okay.
And that was the first time we went right backstage too and introduced ourselves as well. So, and Jake really sold me on the Bees. I heard Brand New Fall. That's my favorite song. Okay. One of my favorites. And they had played that and I immediately went over to the merch booth and there's Jake, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, what was that song? What album is it on? He's like, it's great. You got to get this album. And he just completely sold it. So yeah, ever since then, it's just been, it's like love at first sight. With
I know
band.
I see you at all the shows. and we've been lucky. You know, we've seen them a lot.
Yeah. I'm glad they come through here as much as they do. So yep. That's very awesome. Cool. Well, you mentioned your house shows. I want to talk about that a little bit after the interview. So listeners, stick around. Todd will be back after Luke's interview. And we'll continue digging into Todd Van Hammon, Man of the Mile. In Appleton, you've played Mile of Music before.
Mm-hmm.
This last mile, I asked artists along the way, and I want to ask you, what was that music moment in your life that told you, I want to do this? I want to be on stage.
You know, my dad was a songwriter, but he never like played guitar. You know, he was a carpet layer, is a carpet layer, you know, and I'd hear him sing and stuff. And so I sort of just naturally picked up songwriting. He'd sing his songs. He wouldn't even play guitar. He'd just kind of sing them. And so I started writing music at a very young age, like 10 or so. It wasn't until like college I thought, like, you know what, this is what I want to do. And that for me was, this sounds silly, but I was listening to a song called Ball and Biscuit by the White Stripes.
Okay.
Have you ever heard it? And I just thought, man, I just like it, you know, it got me, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Sure.
And so I felt like, you know what, if I can make people feel this way in any small, like a fraction of what I'm feeling listening to this song right now, That'd be a worthwhile venture, you know.
Sure.
I already write songs if I can, you know, play rock music, you know. So that was, you know, probably I was like 20 or 21 years old. Yeah.
Awesome. Band for since 2013, you said.
Mm-hmm.
You've gone through some member changes through all that
we
time.
We really have, yeah.
Yeah. What's that like to have member rotation in the band?
You know, it's always sad when someone leaves, you know, either just they don't tour or, you know, one of our drummers had a kid, you know, one of them moved away. But it's just a lot of, it feels like, you know, first off, we're in a pretty limited market. Joplin doesn't have just like musicians lined up everywhere trying to, so it's like a search, you know, you try to find, because you want, we always say we want somebody who lives in our town, you know what I mean? Like we want someone who's going to be able to practice a couple times a week and, you know, who's going to be active, and you don't have to worry about getting them here or meeting up before shows or anything. So, you know, so you kind of a limited pool, but it's, you know, always sort of a grind to, you know, a lot of these songs we've played for a million times, but, you know, they're just playing for the first time.
Sure.
So you have to play it 10 times. And it's like, I don't want to play any of these old songs 10 times in a row, but you know, even, you know, with Jake really hadn't played bass except at church like a couple times. And so, you know, I spent 8 or 9 hours a day with him for about 3 weeks straight.
Wow.
Like, you know, going through, and
he's come a long way too.
Yeah,
since
I mean, now he's a friggin' little rock star.
Yeah, I know. But, look what you've created, huh?
I'm a monster. What have I done?
I know, but that's a lot to say too. He was your merch guy originally,
he,
right?
He was, but I mean, like, you know, Jake's a grinder, and that's the thing, is you always want somebody joining who you know is a worker, and
right.
Jake's somebody we trusted on the road. We knew he was a worker, we knew he had great vision, we knew he's passionate about music. You know, what else do you want? It was
right.
You know, a natural fit. And, you know, we always say we want to start with character first. You know, none of us are great musicians, so it's like, but we believe in each other, trust each other, and that's like much more important than somebody who's just like a great musician.
Sure. You know? Well, if you don't think you're great individually, you're certainly great together.
That's the idea.
Yeah. But I think you guys are all talented individually.
We're okay. We're all okay. We are the sum is greater than the parts.
Sure. You
know? Yeah.
And then your latest new member is Ben.
Ben, yeah.
Ben, the drummer. And so that was just a hiring process, or did you know him anywhere in the background at all?
You know, Ben was a coworker of Pete's wife, Gianna, and he worked as a school counselor, actually, for like over a decade, and played drums in a couple bands, and is a very good drummer. But he quit his job.
Oh, wow.
Play in our band, and he works in a different job in the same field, but so that was kind of through Pete's wife that we met him, and okay. Yeah, we just like, you know, he's such a good dude, and you can kind of tell he's just kind of pretty chill and handles himself very well. He loves football. We all are football fans, so it always helps if you have like a common thing you all like, you know.
Sure, but do you like the same team? That's the
question. No. See, it's actually the worst case scenario. Me and Pete are Chiefs fans. He's a Raiders fan, so it's like the worst possible. But, you know, nobody's perfect. Drew.
Right. Yeah, it creates the camaraderie, right? Right.
We watched a Chiefs-Raiders game together. It was fine.
Oh, cool, cool.
Nobody yelled at each other, so that's always the best case scenario.
It's just round one, though.
Right. Yeah. Right. We'll see how it goes.
Let's talk about your new album a little bit.
Okay.
The Disco Two-Step.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did this idea come from?
I think that's a phrase Pete thought of several years ago. He just liked two things that don't go together. And for him, it's kind of like a ism of two, you know, of trying to pursue something like music. It doesn't have, like, not necessarily music, but pursuing something that's sort of outside the norm and how it contradicts with everyday life and how it's like, so it's like two things that don't go together. So it's really about, the whole record's kind of about pursuing passions, you know, so, you know, but it's also a fun name, so
it really is. Yeah. And you got some great merch out of that too.
Oh,
yeah.
For sure. Jake did all that. He designed all that and puts it together and prints it, and I mean, he's a super great asset to the band as far as that goes, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, but a lot of those shirts and those shirt designs are great, for sure.
It's been a long time coming since you've had another album out.
Yeah.
I think you said last night 9 years.
9 years.
9 years. And if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, just doing a little research, the last time I saw you released anything, even a single, was 2019.
Before the pandemic. Yeah.
So finally got some new music out. What's that been like?
It's been awesome. You kind of feel like, what are we doing? Treading water through COVID, you know. Did some touring, but we recorded before touring, but it's great to have it out, and, you know, we feel like the reception's been overwhelmingly positive. So, you know, yeah, I mean, very, you know, whenever Pete wrote most of this record, I mean, almost all of it.
Sure.
You
know? When I asked him last night, he'll spin it the other way and say it's very collaborative.
No. Pete, in most songs, I think 8 of the songs are completely his. I didn't touch them. Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah, and he just like wrote a lot over the pandemic, and, you know, had some stuff from before then. So, you know, this is kind of his baby. Maybe he wouldn't say that. But,
yeah. Well, it's an awesome, awesome album. Well, job well you. Done to all of you guys. I want to talk about a couple songs on the album.
Okay.
One of my first instant favorites was Return to Me.
This is the closest to a song that was written by me and Pete.
Okay.
But I was over at his house. It was actually, I think it was right before 2020, so it was like late 2019. We were just kind of getting together, showing each other some ideas, and I played him just that verse part, you know, the dun dun dun. So I played him that and kind of sang the melody over it. He's like, "Man, I like that." He's like, "Do you have any words?" I'm like, "Not yet." He goes, "Okay, well, like, do you have any lines?" I'm like, "Yeah, I have a couple." And he's like, "Okay, well, just try to put something together real quick, and I'm gonna go grab some coffee." I'm like, "Oh." So he wanted me to write the song real quick. So I did.
Okay. Challenge accepted.
And that's the song. Okay. I wrote that. Okay. And then he came. And then he's like, "Yeah, just keep working on it." And he was kind of like putting some music together. And then he just had me sing it into like a SM57, just a really simple mic.
Okay.
While playing like a simple guitar part. I just did the whole thing. And then he literally said something like, "All right, well, that's all I need from you." I just sang it, and then he put all that music around it together.
Oh, really?
I didn't hear the song until later. Like, he showed me, like, what it turned into. And actually, I think we ended up keeping the demo vocals. Like, the vocals that are on there are from when I just sung it at his house, like, on an SM57, because we liked the performance better. So we kept that and added some stuff. And yeah, he produced the entire song around me, basically just singing into a microphone.
Okay.
He had to put it, he even had to, like, you know, edit it down to where it sounded right in some ways, you know, putting words in the right beats and stuff. So, yeah, so I mean, yeah, he kind of wrote all the music to it, and I just kind of sang into a microphone.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Anywhere you go, I'll be your shadow.
I'm back with Luke.
Hello again.
Hey, and we're talking their new album, Disco Two Step.
Yes.
And some of the tracks off of that.
All right.
Another favorite for me is The Right Stuff. You know, it's just a fun jam to listen to. You can talk about this one, or I'd also like to know, was there a song or two that were super easy to make? I think you kind of alluded to that with Return to Me, but is there one that was challenging to make as well?
Yeah, there's actually a couple songs that didn't go on the record that were, you know, we at least recorded drums, you know, got into the recording process with and decided it wasn't a good fit, or, you know, it just wasn't coming together how we wanted. So, you know, that always happens, you know, where it's like, man, it's not gonna work, you know. I think the song McLean was kind of like that in the studio. We put a lot of extra work in after recording it to make it sound right. So it was like, you know, that one was pretty challenging. Yeah, but the right stuff, I think, you know, I think Pete put together pretty fast. I think he wrote that just like in a sitting. And I think it's because we were saying, you know, we kind of need songs that sound like this, you know, maybe for options. And he brought that to us. And it's so simple, you know what I mean? It's like it's a, such a simple song that has something to it. So, you know, it's, but yeah, easy to record, put together. And really, a lot, there's a lot of like exploration themes in the record. So it's kind of that, you know, the right stuff, like astronauts, you know, sticking to that theme of just like trying to pursue something, you know.
Sure. For me as a listener, a lot of times it's the melody first that I hear, and then I tune into the lyrics a little bit more. Where's the inspiration for what you guys put into lyrics into your music? Is there a certain aspect, or does it differ from song to song? And I'm also going to point out Tammy, you know, a crew member. She picked up on that there are biblical verses or points in a lot of your music.
Mm-hmm.
What draws you to put some of that in there?
I think, you know, you write what you know, and I wouldn't say I'm an overly religious person, but, you know, I am a Christian, and I feel like there's a lot of that wisdom in the Bible that sort of informs my worldview. And so, you know, that just comes out, you know, and some of it's just like things that I think are good for people to hear, you know what I mean? Like occasionally, you know, but yeah, I mean, every song's different. It feels like every time you write a song, it's the first time you've ever written a song. It's like you have to kind of like start from the void, and then it's just like hopefully something spins itself into existence while I'm messing around. You know, it's just like any other creative process. It's like soul crushing along the way, where it's just like, and you know, even when songs really come together, it's like, well, it can't be that easy, you know. Or if you grind on it, it's like still doesn't sound right. But yeah, I mean, as far as the lyrics go, I mean, I feel like I'm constantly writing, constantly stealing, you know. Oh. If there's like a, you know, I'll just listen to audiobooks, and if there's like a phrase that I like, I'll just, I've got an Excel spreadsheet, I'll just, I like that. Right. I like the way you said that. Sure. There it is.
Okay.
Yeah, that's mine now.
Yeah. Very good. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Different way to look at that. Yeah. Okay, let's get to another song that is very interesting to me on the album, Square Jaw, part 1 and 2.
Yeah.
I want to start out by saying I hear that there's, you know, two different points in that song, or it has two different levels to it, I think, almost. Sure. Correct me if I'm wrong there, too, because, like I said, this is music for dummies when you're talking to me.
Gotcha.
But what kind of made me smile on this is it's called Square Jaw, part 1 and 2, which from an outsider's perspective, usually there's part 1, that's one track, and part 2 is a separate track. So can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, so that song was a very traditional song to start, very verse, chorus, attack, chorus. Like, it was like that, and I kept bringing versions to Pete, because that's one of the ones I wrote. I brought it to Pete, because, you know, it's his, I feel like it's his record. I'm going to, you know, you're kind of pushing everything through his filter to see, like, you know, and that's a good thing about having multiple writers, is that you can sort of hand it over, and then they're going to do something, you know, especially Pete, he's usually going to do something better musically than I'm going to come up with, you know. And so I brought him something, he's like, it's just not quite there. He's like, why don't you try writing it verse, 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 verse. We'll do a dramatic change, and then we'll do chorus, chorus, chorus.
Okay.
So I was like, well, that's interesting. And so I tried a version of it, and he's like, not quite. And then I got, I think it was like 6 or 7 versions of the song throughout that I brought him. Okay. You know, re-recorded it, cut it together. And then finally I landed on one. He's like, I think that's it. And that's the version there.
Okay.
Like, it's like, that's kind of what I was thinking. And we kind of plan, that's, you know, kind of an album reset. That's like song number 6 or something.
Yeah.
So it's way different than anything else, but it's kind of like a resets your ear. So it's not just one track leading into another. So it's like a very hard shift, and then you kind of reset.
Okay. So I was kind of curious. That was leading to my next question. How do you decide like the track order, you know, is it song and how it sounds, or is there the story you want to tell with the songs?
That's just kind of up to, that would, Pete put all of these tracks together, you know, it was his project, so, you know, but yeah, you do kind of want to like thematically flow, you know, it's not narrative necessarily, you know, it's not like a linear message, but there is, you know, it's sort of like when you're telling a story, how you unfold certain ideas is important, so it's like, it's more like introducing ideas of the record in a certain order rather than like we're telling a story, you know, so it's like, that's totally subjective up to whoever's putting it together, because, you know, even when we did the Ides, we all had different versions of the track order.
You know? Sure.
Where it's like, this is the, you know, and they were all way different, you know.
Okay.
I think ultimately we kind of used a hybrid of everybody's, but this one was all Pete, putting the track listing together, and I think he wanted to open with that acoustic thing and with an acoustic thing and have that acoustic thing sort of in the middle, like as these little sort of bookends, and then like sort of a ear reset later on, you know. So yeah, there's some method to putting that together, and even sometimes writing, you know, that Disco Is Dead we put together just as like sort of a thing to go there, like,
okay,
it wasn't like really a song, even something, you know, really. I mean, I put some words together and we kind of went over it in the studio for like a minute. And I just text everybody the words, and I was like, this is the melody.
Okay.
And we all just sang it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's not like they were like, everybody's like looking at their phones trying to follow the words. Yeah.
Sure. Wow. That's awesome. Like I said, the album from beginning to end is unique. It's very Bees. It's very fun to listen to, and I enjoy listening to it more and more.
I like that. Very Bees.
Yeah, very Bees. Well, I have a listener question, but it was also one of mine. Speaking of very Bees and your sound, this is kind of twofold. How has your sound, if it has, changed in any way, or have you had to, you know, struggle to keep it the same since you first started? Is there any morphing in there at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think we write very different music now than we did at the beginning, and I think a lot of it's just accepting that you're gonna write some different stuff,
yeah,
and not worrying about it too much.
Okay.
You know, try to keep a sound or something. We're all pretty eclectic people, like I don't think that's gonna happen, you know.
Right.
It's just, you know, we kind of have the philosophy, you write what you write, what you hear, or you know, what you kind of feel, and then that's it.
There it is. Yeah. And that's very Bees, if you ask me, because yeah. you do change, you do more if you do write different kind of stuff, but at the end it comes together so nicely that it's just in your performance that is what's selling it, and that's what's very Bees to me.
Yeah.
Kind of piggybacking off that though, as music fans and my crew and Mile of Music, we've been hearing different music, especially coming from Joplin as well, mm-hmm. outside of just Appleton, and we've noticed with another band too, there's kind of a similar sound. And I don't know if that's on purpose, but we were curious if there's a sound that is Joplin or could be.
Maybe could be. I don't think there is like a Joplin sound, because most of what's happening in Joplin's more like Red Dirt and like country kind of sounding stuff.
Oh,
a lot
okay.
of this, you know, or like rockabilly. You know, there's a lot of like sort of that rock folk kind of thing. I'm not sure which band, which other
Fox
band?
Royale.
Fox Royale. I got you. Okay. I mean, I think we're both maybe the only two real indie bands out of Joplin. You know?
Okay.
So I don't know if it's a Joplin sound necessarily. I think we probably listen to some of the same people.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were just kind of connecting the dots, and that was a very, I would say, naive perspective just to two bands
Sure.
that, you know, we came from the same area. Is there a distinct sound in that area or something that influences you guys?
I don't know regionally if that's the case. Okay. You know, I think we're all just internet babies. You know?
Gotcha. All right. I want to circle back to one last track on your new album, Green Boots.
Yes.
Which was your last song last night.
Yeah.
Beautifully performed on stage there.
Thank you.
And that's your song?
That is my song.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that song means a lot to me. You know, it was a pandemic song. You know, I wrote some music over the pandemic too, and that was one of them. And I showed it to Pete. Really, I mean, we only got together to work on music maybe 3 or 4 times in 2020. You know, it was just
wow,
what's the point? You know,
yeah.
Kind of felt. But I said, hey, do you just want to get together and listen through some stuff? You know, we've been working on or whatever. And he's like, yeah, sure. And I, you know, brought him that. It was just a recording on my phone. I'm like, I wrote this song. I said, I don't think it's like a Me Like Bees song, but, you know, I like it. And so I was showing it to him. He's like, I don't know, man. We might be able to do something with it. Sure. I was like, hey, all right, cool. Yeah, and that was, that's a song I wrote not in a good place mentally, just kind of woe is me, you know, but it's kind of about pursuing things and how it feels like. You know, it's so hard to get any traction with anything, but also I don't want it to ever end. You know, it's
right.
like it's such a struggle, and it's one that I hope never stops, you know.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, anything worthwhile pursuing is going to cost you, you know. It's going to cost
sure.
you a lot, and it's going to be exhausting. And Just hope it doesn't ever stop.
Yeah, well, it's a powerful song to hear it coming from that perspective, but it's a good song for you, I think, to have to keep performing with and kind of remind you, I'd think, you know.
For sure.
Cool. I do have one more question. Aaron was curious, what would you want longtime listeners, fans to know about your new album before listening to it?
You know, that we poured ourselves into it and it comes from a real place, and that I think it's the best thing we ever put out. I really do. That we, you know, it's made out of love, so hopefully they can feel that, you know, in the record.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think they will. Yeah.
All right.
All right, Luke. Well, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Drew. It's so good to see you.
I'm so tired, but if I ever rest, if I take a second, now I'm second best. In every summit I'm able to reach, sits under the shadow of another peak. Still, I don't want you to tell me we're standing on our last peak. I'm so tired of analogies, writing in code when I can plainly speak, and it's okay to say just what you mean. Go ahead and say it if that's what you need. I just don't want you to tell me we're standing on our last peak, peak, peak. I have a peak like a mountain, a peak like a child, looking through a door at Christmas, watching everyone smile. Got nothing to hope, but still I'm hoping in a while we can find it, and it's finally our. I ain't sleeping with old green boots in the cold. I won't lay me down. I ain't sleeping with old green boots in the cold. On the beast now. I ain't sleeping with old green boots in the cold. I won't lay me down. I ain't sleeping with old green boots in the cold. I haven't peaked like a mountain, no, I peaked like a child, looking through a door on Christmas, watching everyone else smile. Got a thing to hope, but still I'm hoping in a while we can find it, and it's finally our year. No, can't drink from the fellow while you're swimming up the now, and the current's all backwards and it's full of crocodiles. No for the arrival, cause we'll go another mile, but all my friends from the river don't seem happy, and all I ever wanted to make you was happy. I ain't sleeping with old green boots in the cold. I won't lay me down. I ain't sleeping with old green boots in the cold. All in this now. I ain't sleeping with old green boots in the cold. I won't lay me down. I ain't sleeping with old green boots in the cold. God bless you guys.
All right, welcome back to the Drew Hahn Show. I'm here with Todd Still. Thanks for sticking around, by the way. So you have a rich history with the bees, but what's your music background like? Do you play any instruments? Have you been in a band? What's the story there from Todd?
I don't play anything. I've tried a little bit on guitar.
Okay.
I have several guitars, but they're all just autographed and hanging up.
Okay.
but yeah, just... I really think a music lover from childhood. My brother was big into music, and he was a fair bit older than me.
Okay.
So it was a big deal for me as a little kid to just hang out in my brother's room and, you know, listen to whatever he was listening to. And he was always, you know, recording albums and, you know, swapping albums with buddies and stuff. So we're listening to tons of stuff, and he's recording on reel to reel. And,
okay,
you know, we're sitting there having some great times, and all we're doing is listening to music. But it was like an escape, and it was really cool. And there wasn't much to do in the 70s.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm that old. So it was, you know, TV wasn't as big of a thing like it is now and a million things on. So we spent a lot of time just exploring albums and listening to bands and stuff. So that's really, I think, what sparked
it. Okay, cool. So you're known for hosting your house concerts. How did you find yourself wanting to do that?
Well, it was never on my radar to do that, but I was a extremely big fan of the Verve Pipe and the singer Brian Vander Ark from the Verve Pipe, and I had, you know, been following him online and stuff like that, and I found out that he was going to actually record like a solo record. So I traveled, like he released it. It was amazing. I wanted to see him play it live. Well, there were no shows in Wisconsin, so I literally drove like 10 hours to see him play in northern Michigan and at a tavern. It was $3 to get in. It was just a dive.
Okay.
But I went because I wanted to see it, and it kind of started from there. I sent him an email or something like that just to get some details, because this dive tavern didn't have a lot of details online and stuff. And he thought it was pretty special. Someone's willing to drive, you know, all this way to, you know, see him play and stuff like that. And I had him sign his CD at the show and stuff like that, but I didn't talk to him.
Oh, okay.
So he sent me an email like afterwards, like, are you okay? Like, I'm worried. You said you were coming and I didn't. I'm like, well, no, I was in the front row and you signed my CD. And he's like, you didn't tell me it was you and stuff like that. So anyway, he at some point realized that a singer-songwriter, acoustic, you know, not folk, but acoustic rock, but softer, can't just play in smoky sports bars. So he came up with the idea, and I mean, it's not like other people weren't doing it, but he really wanted to kind of put together a tour and play for his fans. Through all the years that the Verve Pipe were pretty successful, he had built a giant mailing list, and a lot of those people had hung around and were buying his solo records and stuff like that. So he sent an email out to fans to book a show. So that started it all, and it was just like, oh my gosh, like, I never thought of hosting a show, but if he's going to come and play a show at my house, I got to make this happen. And I agreed to do it. My wife was not too happy because I did not ask her. I booked it and I asked for weeks. When I booked it, it was only like my date of my show was only like a month and a half away.
Mm-hmm.
So so I had to finally break it to my wife that, yeah, I booked this before I even asked you the first time. And I've been asking for weeks, but I have to come clean. It's only in like 10 days. like we're going to have people over. I'm like, I don't know how mad you're going to be, but you know, so she was pretty mad.
Oh boy.
But once he played here and, you know, he completely won her over, and she was like immediately like, you could have him back anytime. That was incredible. And we should invite more people the next time. Cause I think there was 17 or 18 people at the first show we had.
Sure.
And that was to appease her.
Yeah.
She had it stuck in her head that our house was going to get trashed.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, we're having a rock show in our house, and that's not what it is at all. And so once she witnessed that and was like amazed that we just had MTV unplugged in our living room, You could do it again. And I had Brian come back like 3 months later and play again, or maybe two and a half, something like that. And then my live audio recording from that show, I sent it to him like days after the show. Within a week's time, I got a phone call, and it was Brian, and he's like, hey, I got the CD, and like, I got some questions and whatever. And I'm like, at this time, you know, it's like private number, you know, I'm like, I don't know who is this? And well, this is Brian. I'm like, well, Brian who? And he's like, Vanderark, I just played at your house. And I'm like thinking it's a buddy pulling a prank on me, you know? So finally I'm like, okay, yeah, it does sound like you. So we had a conversation, and basically it boiled down to, he's like, your live recording is incredible. I want to release this as like the official live recording of the tour and sell it at other shows, because it'll be such a great representation of what people just witnessed at a house show.
Absolutely. Okay.
And he's like, you know, your crowd was incredible. You know, he's like, people knew like what lyrics to laugh at, and you know, like what parts are kind of, you know, softer moments in the song and stuff. And he's like, you can hear the audience reaction so well and stuff. So, and he wanted to pay me for that.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I'm like, no, you let me record. You played a show in my house, just burn it and sell it. So he's like, I knew you'd be cool about this or whatever. And that's where kind of a relationship started with him. And we started booking a show every year.
Okay.
And then, so he's played here 11 times.
Okay. I was going to ask, how many house shows have you had total?
The one coming up in a couple weeks will be 39.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, so it's getting, the number's getting up there. Now, it hasn't been a giant number of different artists. I mean, it's not small, I guess, at this point, but because yeah. I mean, then there was, you know, all of opening acts and stuff like that as well. But my wife constantly tells me, we're not a venue. Mm. Let's keep it special and, you know, not just have just anyone under the sun. So, you know, I have to at that point. I can't just book anybody. You know, I have a lot of people ask me, like, we'd love to play your house or whatever. But it's like, I'm always nervous that if I can only do 3 or 4 a year, if I just throw in someone new and then one of these artists that I followed for 30 years comes along and be like, hey, I'm open for a show if you want to do another one. I just don't want to end up having too many and then, you know, have someone yelling at me that right. This is too many shows. So there's been a lot, but once, like I said, she wasn't on board after the first one. She said I could have him back. He comes back the next summer. He played again. Then she was like, all right, this is a pretty special thing. If there's other artists that you followed for a long time, you know, you could probably, you know, have them come as well. So I had a couple other artists like Brian that I have followed for a long time. So I had the singer from Caroline Spine come, and now he's played here more than a handful of times. And the singer from the Rainmakers has flown in from Kansas City like 8 times now to play.
Wow, okay.
And he's toured the world opening for Rush in Kansas and Doobie Brothers, and they've been all over. So yeah, there's been a lot of kind of long time, almost legacy bands at this point where, you know, I followed for 20, 30 years, and, you know, I'm now friends with the singer because, you know, we built a relationship.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's spawned from that too. After he came that third time, after Brian came, he asked me, could you start booking all my house shows? So then for 10 years, I booked as many as 100 house concerts a year for him from coast to coast.
Wow.
So I'd set up the weekend and just say, put on the calendar and, hey, Brian, you're in Southern California this weekend. And you play 2 shows in LA, and then there's 2 in San Diego, and you fly back and stuff like that. So
look at you, Todd.
Yeah, so I did that for 10 years. And then, you know, I mean, I drive to as many shows as I could and sell merch for him and stuff like that and do whatever. So he would pay me, you know. And he said, he's like, well, for doing this for me, you'll get 1 free house show a year for helping me book all these other ones. And I never took him up on that because I sell tickets. So I'm like, these people want to come and see you. If they're willing to pay, I'm just giving you the money. So I'm like, you know, he's got a long drive to get here. You know, it's like at least 6 hours to come from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Sure.
So, you know, got to make it worth his while.
Yeah, absolutely. With all those house shows, I know they're probably all amazing. Is there ever one in your mind that just stands out as a favorite along the way?
Well, it's really tough to pick between, you know, what's number one, because there's a 1A and 1B. So let's put it that way. So, and like you said,
they're all special.
They're all incredible. And, you know, from the first Brian show, you know, there's just, they're all like goosebump moments every single time. But we had a couple really, really unbelievable just twists of fate that happened. One of them being a band that I followed since the 90s called Stir. Stir was on Capitol Records. They were played on MTV a lot. They'd be on WAPL and stuff like that. And they played 3 shows at Ryan's Ballroom. I don't think you lived in the area at the time, but that was in Combined Locks. Just fantastic rock shows, and they're just great. They kind of went away. You know, they got dropped by the label and stuff, and a shakeup in the, you know, the record industry and all this stuff. And they started doing some reunion shows in 2016, and me being a crazy music fan, I started driving to St. Louis to see whenever they would do a reunion show.
Okay.
So we went there, and I dragged my wife to a show, to the second one, and I met a whole bunch of friends of Stir, you know, that are, now I have this kind of family of fans that I know, and they all travel in as well to see them. And so I started seeing them and talking to the guys in the band. And I had emailed the singer of that band to come and play a show.
Okay.
But he wasn't really playing music at the time. He lived in LA. He was focused on his custom motorcycle business and stuff like that. But now that the band reunited, I kind of said, you know, if it ever could happen again, I'm still interested.
Okay.
And he's like, yeah, I know you are. I know you are. And so then our oldest daughter was looking at colleges. And one of the colleges she wanted to look at was St. Louis University, which happened to kind of timing worked out great. They were doing a one show that summer around the 4th of July. We lined it up with my daughter's college visit, and we got to do both in the same weekend, which was fantastic. And they got done playing, and my youngest daughter, who really loves Stir as well, she wanted to go to the merch booth and say hi to the guys, maybe have dad buy her a t-shirt or something, you know? So we're walking over there, and she's like, are they going to know who you are, Dad? No way. No way. Well, we get 30 feet from the merch table, and Andy, the singer, starts yelling at me, Todd, Todd, get over here, get over here. And I'm like, what's up? And he's like, hey, we just got booked for an acoustic gig at the House of Blues in Chicago, which is a big venue.
Yeah.
Huge. He's like, so that's in November. And I'm like, great, I'll be there. Like, but why do you got to tell me that? And he's like, well, I'm going to be coming in November to Chicago. And I'm like, oh, you're going to fly in early and play a show in the living room? He said, no, I'm going to bring the whole band and we're going to play in the living room. So I had a 90s band that I love do a full-on reunion show in the living room the night before the House of Blues in Chicago. So they kind of used it as their warm-up night because they rarely play. They've never played like a full band acoustic show until my living room, and to warm up for the next night because they wanted them to play acoustic at that show because there was a whole bunch of acts playing, including Brian Vander Ark that night, because they used to be on Aware Records, which was like an indie label based out of Chicago. So they were label mates at that time, and that show was like the guy who owned that label, was like his birthday party. So he had all his favorites from over the years that were on his label show up and play at his birthday party.
Okay.
At the House of Blues. So I don't know if he rented it out or whatever, but I think this guy's got a lot of money. But crazy twist of fate that one of your favorite 90s rock bands comes and plays a show at your house. So that would say is 1A. And then 1B would be for my 50th birthday party, I had Black Moods play in the living room. Acoustics, full band.
Wow.
So at that point, they were just starting to have like hit, you know, they had hit Billboard Top 40 with a couple songs, I think, at that point. Maybe the third one was just starting to chart. And, you know, they're taking off. And it was like, man, I don't know how I could swing this and afford it or whatever. But it's like, ah, it's 50th birthday party. Like, I'm just going to blow the rest of the money and just make it happen. And that night was pretty darn amazing. Okay. So, and I'm trying to think, like, who opened that night? I think Eric and Marty opened that night. They've opened a ton of shows here, being, you know, some of my best friends. But yeah, and Listening Party opened for Stir. So that was a pretty crazy night.
Yeah.
So Listening Party two-piece opened for Stir. That was crazy. So I would say that's 1A and 1B.
1B. Sweet. All right. Wow, that's cool, Todd. Speaking of your house shows, and Brian from the Verve Pipe, you said plays here a lot. First of all, have you had the whole band play here?
I haven't. I've kicked around the idea now of having them play in the driveway, because once we started doing some bigger shows in the driveway and getting food trucks and porta potties and stuff like that, now it's maybe I could raise enough money to afford them. So that's still possible at some point. And I've got a friend I've met through music, and she's good friends with another 90s band. And I'm not going to say their name, but they've gotten to be really good friends with her. And they told her they owe her a 50th birthday party, that they will play her a free show. Okay. Well, she's like, I have nowhere to host it. So she's like, could you host it for me in your driveway? So if that were to happen... And, you know, it's all timing. It has to work with their touring schedule and stuff like that. They used to tour with the Verve Pipe. So it would be really incredible if they both played together.
Okay, yeah. But,
yeah, I mean, again, it's one of those things, like, if you think about it, it'll never happen. But I've had so many things that should have never happened at our house. So I'm not going to say it's impossible.
Right. Well, it's fun to dream. You got some exactly. Dreams there. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So with the Verve Pipe, you've actually toured with them.
Yeah. So
how does that come to be?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, like I said, you know, Brian was coming here annually, and I started booking all his shows. So obviously we're chatting with each other a bunch. I'm going on the road and, you know, to see shows, but then I'd sell merch for him, whether it's in Chicago or Milwaukee or wherever he was playing. And then the Verve Pipe were still doing a few shows here and there, and I would travel and go and see them. They did have a kind of a merch guy that worked with them, but I'd step back and help him if he was really busy, but get to, you know, I got to meet everyone and everyone knew who I was and stuff like that. So at some point, my wife and I were at a show in Madison, and Brian had texted me and he's like, "Hey, I never asked if you and Jen were coming to the show today." So I'm like, "Well, yeah, we're here. Get your butt on stage. Come on, let's go." And he's like, "Well, no, wait a second. Where are you standing?" or whatever. So I tell him, and sure enough, here he walks. See him coming from backstage because he's like 6'8", 6'9", or whatever. And he comes right through the crowd, grabs us, and pulls us backstage. And he's like, "Okay, I have something to ask you." And I'm like, "Okay, you know, what's going on?" And and he's like, we don't know. They haven't been touring. You know, they'll do maybe a weekend with maybe a Friday, Saturday show. But they haven't gone on an actual tour. Well, they got booked for a tour. So they're playing the Southwest and Texas. And, yeah, he just straight out said, "We want you to come with us." And I just kind of looked at him like, "What the heck am I going to do?" Like, he's like, "Well," he goes, "I'm going to be honest. First and foremost, we need you to drive."
Oh.
So you'll drive the Sprinter. He's like, and he's like, "You sold merch for us tons of times. So, you know, you'll do that." And he goes, "I'm sure you'll help load gear in and whatever else. And, you know, I'll find you more stuff if you want." So I told him, "Well, you have to ask my wife." And she said no.
Oh.
Which, you know, Brian really took him, you know, made him take a step back. And he's like, "What?" And then she's like, "Well, he gets to do all the fun stuff. And I'm at home with the dog." So anyway, so then she's like, "No, of course he can go," and stuff like that. So Brian knew that I work from home, and he was really curious, like, "Well, could you work from the road?" Whatever. And I'm like, "I'm going to take vacation and enjoy myself for the 2 weeks that we're gone out on the road and stuff like that." So that was 2018. I've gone on many long weekends since, several tours. And then actually this year, when a tour started to form for August, he called me and he's like, "I got something to ask you. You know, we have this tour coming for August." And he goes, "I'm assuming, you know, you want to go." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, of course." And he's like, "We want you to be the full tour manager now." And I'm like, "What?" Like, "I don't know what that means, but I'm in, you know, like, just tell me what I got to do." And he's like, "Well," he's like, "from talking to Randy, you pretty much do all this stuff at the shows anyway." You know, because Randy's just like, "Todd will do that." And Todd, you know, he's just given me duties over the times we've been going to make it easier on him so he can set up his gear and be ready to go and stuff like that. So we went on a national tour opening for Five for Fighting for a month, and I was the tour manager, and it was pretty crazy. So, yeah, so I'm the driver, the tour manager, the merch guy, the roadie, the guitar tech for Brian. I set up his guitars and tune them and get them ready for him. And
oh, wow.
So, yeah, whatever they need me to do. So, and then we're out with a, you know, even a bigger band that had really huge hits. So it was quite the experience. And this all, you know, spawned from booking Brian that first time.
Wow, no kidding. What a story.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible that something like that would happen. And, you know, just being a band that you love, that you follow, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wild.
That's why you're a man of the music, Todd.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just, yeah, it's just like a passion of, you know, going to shows and recording them and, you know, sharing them with the bands and stuff like that. And then.
Can you elaborate a little bit on, you video record and you audio record, you've said. What do you do with all those recordings? And what kind of collection do you have?
Well, this being an audio podcast, you couldn't really grasp, there's a lot of recordings. And I mean, I'll burn CDs still. I'm old school.
No, I like that.
But, you know, I do have just many, many, many portable hard drives full of material. Like, at some point, some of these bands are going to come to me and, like, want to do, you know, or just for history's sake, they want to show their kids stuff. Like, look what Dad did when he was younger. And I'm going to have just so much stuff to show them because I must have recorded the Bees like 40 times now. You know, now I don't video record every single show. With the Bees, I try to, like, you know, I kind of, the video is just, it's a lot of more disk space, it's a lot of messing around. But I do have like 1,000 videos on my YouTube channel.
Oh, you have a YouTube channel?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize this, Todd.
Yeah, I don't use my name, so people don't know that that channel is me. But, I mean, a lot of them do. So there's a lot of Mile of Music, you know, like just all sorts of stuff, you know. It's just bands I go to and whatever. And I might video an entire show, but I might just pick out a song or two to upload to YouTube. So I just, you know, I'll edit it out. Sometimes I'll have multiple camera angles running and I'll edit them together and have multi-cam videos of a Mile show or something like that. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there and there's a lot of stuff that isn't posted. So,
yeah, I can only imagine. Yeah. Oh, cool. That's pretty much it, Todd. I just wanted to, you know, find out what makes Todd tick, and I think you've nailed that on the head for sure.
Okay,
I mean, and I wanted your insights on the bees, so thanks for sharing that too and all your stories. I'm glad you came on the show as well, and thanks again for letting me interview Luke here, and thanks for letting me come here and interview you.
Okay, thanks so much, Drew.
I quickly want to say thanks for tuning in, folks, and thanks to both Luke and Todd for coming on the show. They have a great friendship, and weaving their stories together on the show seemed to feel like a perfect fit. Todd was intended for the intro and outro only, but I really feel like I could have pulled his time on the show out, asked him a few more questions, and had the devoted music fan he is have an episode devoted just to him. In the meantime, guys, make sure to keep an eye out for upcoming shows by artists I'm interviewing. Luke Schaefer will be back soon for a house show at Todd's. It'll be a duo show with Carter Halsey, another favorite of ours here in the Valley. Make sure you're following the Drew Hahn Show Facebook page, as Carter will soon be featured as well on the show. Reminders to not only follow on the socials, but leave comments, like, follow, and share. All that good stuff. Thanks again for tuning in, and we will see you around the mile.